Kyle as the sun was coming up.
Donna and Kelly Mulholland, who are still on the Hill, came to our studio recently to discuss their latest themed project. Earlier, similar CDs have celebrated the Buffalo River, the Ozarks, and Beaver Lake. Like those projects, Cane Hill involves a series of concerts around the region. The public debut of the music is this weekend at Walton Arts Center, but tickets for that concert are all gone. They'll also be performing at the Eureka Springs Folk Festival early next month, and future dates in Harrison, Springdale, and Rogers. The first song, this one that we're listening to right now on Still in the Hill's new CD, Cane Hill, lets an 8-year-old boy give us a tour of what the community might have been like nearly 100 years ago.
My next stop was the Cooperage. I watched them bend them staves. Nothing but the finest oak, clear, straight, and aged. Sturdy apple barrels all lined up in a row. I dreamed that I might work there someday.
Kelly and Donna say to write that opening song on the CD, Cane Hill, they imagined themselves as that 8-year-old boy.
As he went from shop to shop, and he went, you know, he went
Mercantile and the Cooperage. I mean, a lot of people don't even know what a Cooperage is.
Barrels.
Yeah. Is it
barrel
apple?
Stays.
They huge apple orchards, and so yeah. And then he'd visit the blacksmith and the doctor,
loafer's bench.
The loafer's bench,
where the old men would whittle on the bench, and he'd hear stories, and yeah. So that we figured that would be the perfect first song, just to kind of introduce the whole town as it was long ago.
So this was a commission.
It was.
I mean, it followed Once a River, Still a River.
Mm-hmm. It was. We were so pleased that the historic Cane Hill actually approached us, and they have a really energetic board. And one thing I love about the board of this organization is most of the people involved grew up there, and they are really, really attached to Cane Hill's history. So they actually approached us and wanted to see how we might be able to help draw attention to what they were working on. And we said, oh, well.
And they gave us the freedom to research. We spent a lot of time in their beautiful little museum just reading and learning about everything that was in the museum. A lot of our story songs came from the museum itself.
And we did interviews. Mm-hmm. We did quite a bit of research. But really, you know, they had seen us do the Buffalo River. They'd seen us do the Beaver Lake album. And so finally, somebody just came right up to us and said, what about this, you know? And we wish that would happen more often.
Well,
I can give you lists of things that I would like you to do. I
mean, okay.
You probably expect to get, you know, to be able to pay rent and buy food when you do these things. Mm-hmm. So I can't help you there. So when you do these projects, there's history and legend, and you kind of let them meet. Because
right,
you don't always know all the facts behind the stories.
Absolutely. The one Molly song in particular, there's a painting in Cane Hill by Molly Mock and the three Mock sisters. We read the old catalog from the college, and we kind of pieced together it's slightly legend and slightly true.
They were from Prairie Grove.
They were
from
Prairie Grove. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, there's two or three songs in there you could really call fictional based on historical accounts. So yeah,
And then the other ones are true, every line from, you know, true. But
when you first told me you were going to do this, I knew that there would have to be something about the Cane Hill hanging. That's one of the most infamous events that ever happened in that community.
Yes.
How do you know when you've got a song about an event like that? I mean, you can't just, I don't think you just sit down and say, okay, now I'm writing this.
Into Cane Hill after the battle of Prairie Grove, with their muskets held high, a cheering and a shouting like braggadocious schoolboys. Before the fall comes the pride, and someone was hiding up on a rooftop, and no one ever knew who fired those pot shots. But those bullets brought some blue coats down, and a scapegoat must be found, and there would be a hanging in Cane Hill Town.
That was a difficult song because, first of all, it's just really about the chaos of war. There's no good guys or bad guys in this episode. You know, the Union soldiers victorious at Prairie Grove went on down to Cane Hill to celebrate, and in celebration they burned many homes in the college, and somebody took some pot shots at them. And, of course, the commander was furious, and then he decided to scapegoat three elderly men since they couldn't figure out who actually did it, and they hung the men. And the story, you know, then unfolds. A young teenager actually risks her life and goes and cuts the men down in the night. So it's a harrowing story, and there's nothing good about it, but it seemed like it needed to be told. We kind of took a chance on that one. They don't know where the hanging tree is. They don't know if it even exists anymore. And but there is a tree in downtown Cane Hill that is magnificent. It's a bur oak tree, and it is huge.
And old.
And we know, I feel pretty sure it was around during the Civil War.
And the perspective of that song is from the hanging tree's perspective. So
we just pretended that was the tree.
Yeah.
But we make it clear that we don't know that.
You know, you ask the right person and they will tell you they do know it's the tree, even though they don't know it's the tree.
Right.
We've had some people say they know it's the tree, and others say, no, we don't know.
Some of the board members of Historic Cane Hill are very much sticklers for accuracy.
Yes.
And that's good, because somebody needs to keep an eye on us.
You know how you're reading the liner notes to a Still on the Hill album? There's a sentence like this. Every time we visit the Cane Hill Museum, we are drawn to a tiny metallic shoe.
Well, of course we are.
Exactly. Of course you are. That's the impetus for the song, The Charm.
Oh, and I love that little shoe, and I am drawn to it. It was a tiny shoe that looks exactly like the little metal shoe in the Monopoly game, but it was given to a teacher, Laura Houston, from one of her students, way before Monopoly was ever invented.
So
the mystery is, you know, did that shoe inspire the Monopoly shoe?
Right. And there's nobody that knows that. We just let the mystery be.
We play some children's bells on that because it's a teacher song. So we have some fun little instruments and unusual things to throw into the mix of the show.
Right.
Is there ever, even for 2 or 3 seconds, concern when you're doing a project like this, like, what if we don't have enough material?
Not on this one, because right away, right after we met with the board and then we went to the museum, we could just smell that there was a whole bunch of stories.
Actually, there's more. There was some that we wanted to write that we didn't even. We have 12 songs on the CD, and we could have written more. It was a shoe-in. That's such a historic town. There's so the Trail of Tears went through there.
Right, and you sing about that as well.
Yes, yeah.
We do, but there again, not much detail, and so a lot of guesswork. But it's kind of just a sad reflection on this little girl.
Actually, I took that Susan Young from the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale went to the old Carnahan Cemetery, which is one of the oldest cemeteries anywhere around here. And she was hearing, she had heard about Elsie Timberlake, this young girl that died near there, and the receipt for her coffin is in the museum. And she wrote this whole article that just moved me so deeply called Finding Elsie Timberlake. So I used hers. And then she also sent me a journal by B.B. Cannon. And he was the overseer that marched these people, the Timberlakes, all the way from Tennessee through Cane Hill. And he had a journal. And so I used his journal in the research for that song as well. been blown Carnahan Cemetery. A lonesome breeze whisked me back in time to 1837. Lord, I felt like crying. I could see families living in fear on the trail of tears. The Timberlakes, they were Cherokee, forced to travel west from Tennessee, across Kentucky and through Illinois. They'd already buried their youngest boy.
Cane Hill is small now and had decades of dormancy. Before this sort of revitalization, there were, you turned left if you, you know, around Prairie Grove if you wanted to go to Oklahoma. There was some pretty good barbecue there for a while. But there was a time before the Civil War when it was an important place, not just in Washington County, not just in Arkansas, but in this part of the country.
Mm-hmm. I think it was actually headed for to be the nucleus of Northwest Arkansas, or the, you know, the center point of population. I suppose ultimately the railroad made the decision to pass it up. And left it high and dry, because before that, you're right, it had the apple industry.
College.
It had the college.
The first college that allowed women.
Mm-hmm.
Very
so,
cool. It had a pottery factory.
Yes.
They dug the clay out of, I guess Cane Hill had the best clay for, we think it'd be so cool if some really young entrepreneurial potter would go and dig the actual clay and make pots out of Cane Hill clay again. That'd be so cool.
That kind of reminds me of the apples as well. The apple industry was huge, and but it's all but disappeared. But I love this. You know, in Springdale, there's that wonderful group of folks that put together the Black Apple Crossing, where they're doing ciders.
Yeah.
Well, they are very interested in Cane Hill because they're interested in heirloom Arkansas apples. And so they have planted apple trees in Cane Hill to use in their business.
Wow.
I think 400 trees, a large number of trees.
I wonder how long it takes before we'll be able to taste cider from that. I mean, it's not going to be next year.
It'll be, a couple, at least. I don't know.
No, we don't know.
Mm, won't that be nice?
Yes.
It won't be nice. But, you know, the songwriting came fast. You know, Donna is quick. But we're meandering into a new process where Donna whacks out the songs quite quickly in a kind of a rough way. And then she gives them to me.
In the raw.
On a little tape recorder, you know. And then I take them and I do some editing and kind of some co-writing and putting in interludes. And then we get into the studio and we took about 4 or 5 months of work in the studio.
More like eight.
To put all the pieces together. And then after all that's done, this is so foreign to the most songwriters. It's after all that's done, then we have to listen to the CD and find out how in the world are we going to play this with just the two of us. Okay. So
that is backwards.
Usually you go into a studio knowing every song.
If you're going to play it live, you've got to figure out, okay, well, we can't do that.
Usually you've been playing it on stage. You've kind of got it all worked out. That's not the case. We had to, and we tried really hard. You know, we have lots of parameters, like we want to keep colorful, so we want it to be banjo or mandolin or dulcimer or ukulele or guitar, or, you know, keep it constantly moving so that the texture's always changing.
Here's the potential danger I see for the two of you doing this, in that you write so quick and you can play anything, jawbones or whatever. So you're so creative when you're putting it together that when it is done, how do you recreate that sound if it's just going to be two of you on stage?
It's not the same animal anymore.
We have to step back and just hear it. I think it's harder for Kelly because he spends probably 80% in the studio to my 20, bass and upright bass and all the instruments that he plays and the arranging. And he gets real, falls in love with the arrangements that are on the CD. And so when we do them in the more stripped down version, that's just what sounds like us.
Right.
And his ear wants to hear what he created on the CD.
Yeah, because let me give you the complete list of what is on this CD. Besides your voices, steel and nylon string guitars, banjo, Jim Lee's handmade five-string banjo, pump organ, upright bass, harmonica, recorders, ukulele, melodica, mandolin, hand percussion, fiddle, mountain dulcimer, and, of course, the jawbone.
That's right.
And he does it all except I get to play the fiddle. A jawbone
and the dulcimer. I love the fretless banjo was kind of important on this. There's one song I really enjoyed doing was Booth Campbell was the town musician.
Yes.
And well known, well documented by Mary Parler, the song Catcher. from Arkansas, and her the collection actually resides at the University of Arkansas now, and so the committee really wanted a representation of Booth Campbell, and I think they're right to ask us. So we listened to the Mary Parler collection. We selected a really fun song called "Goodbye, My Honey, I'm Gone,"
traditional song.
And then I had this very interesting fretless banjo. Since he was a fretless banjo player, I felt like I needed to do it on a fretless banjo. And we recorded it real old style. We got this old antique microphone in the middle of us, and we just whacked it out without any overdubs, you know, just raw.
Thanks. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you. Right.
As always, thank you.
Kelly and Donna Mulholland are still on the Hill, and their brand new CD is titled Cane Hill. Their first public performance of the songs is Sunday at Walton Arts Center, but all the tickets have been taken. Don't worry. Other public shows are scheduled, including a November 9th concert that will open the Eureka Springs Folk Festival at The Odd on November 9th, a performance at the Lyric Theater in downtown Harrison on December 15th, and a January 19th show at Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale. Still other shows in Little Rock, Tulsa, Rogers, and Bentonville have been scheduled. You can find the scheduled performances, as well as the CD, available at stillonthehill.com.